helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. The best response to a lie is not to silence it, but to expose it. There are plenty of lies floating around America today, and I believe it's time we start exposing some of them. Just look at how many lies are being used to attempt to rule our lives, to control us. We're told that those who are white have privilege, while those who are colored are oppressed. We're told that a boy can become a girl just by thinking it so. We're told the judges rule the world and that government can borrow and spend money without consequence. We're told that the Department of Justice is out to protect us and that churches have no place in the public discourse. Of course, all of these are lies. So all that's really left to do is, well, to start exposing the truth. Hello, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me today. You know, I'm sure all of us have that sense of glee when we just want to yell, "I told you so." When the person you're debating with gets just so caught up in their own rhetoric and they realize they're caught, and you just want to say, "I told you so." Of course, it's not polite to say "I told you so," but it can be very effective to observe someone when they're caught in that situation. There's this video that's been going pretty much viral about somebody who, well, just got caught in such a situation.
I grew up as a white man, and you're the exact opposite, you know? And so it's like my experiences are going to be different from yours.
How come?
I think, you know, there's a thing of like white privilege.
Privileges do you have that I don't have?
Oh, see, that's the question I keep asking myself.
Okay, I want to break in here for just a second because there's actually some really good things happening in here. Now, you may have seen the video or you may have guessed from the context of the video, but what we have is a brown woman interviewing a white man. And he starts right off with, "Well, you see, I'm a white male, therefore my experience is different from yours." And she says, "Why?" And it's really important for those of you, whether you're debating me or anyone else, you are much better off asking questions. She's asking, "Why do you feel that? Why are you doing that?" It's much more effective than trying to get into somebody's face. And he says that, he even says, "That's a really good question." It is a really good question. Now let's listen to which, by the way, is often a stalling tactic. Right, you say something, it's a really good question. It gives your mind a couple seconds to think. But listen to what the rest of his response.
Oh, see, that's the question I keep asking myself. Because, like, in this day and age, like, all the laws, I say all the laws, you know, it's hard to speak on something I'm not fully knowledgeable of. So, like, I'm sorry if I, like, make a mistake in saying this. But it's
So here we see he's a little bit of stumbling. He says, I'm talking about things I'm not fully aware of. That quickly became obvious. And he's stuck. Now, the interviewer, Savannah Hernandez, she does something very interesting. She's prompting him. She's not giving in to him. She's prompting him to think on a little bit. And listen to that.
Don't you think it's a problem in society when white people think that they have more privileges than brown or black people?
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the agenda that's pushed off because personally, it's like, not that I think I'm more privileged than anyone else because I had to work to get where I was.
And there we have, in my mind, the turn. See, by asking him questions, if she were to simply confront him and challenge him, his natural reaction would be to bow up and push against the attack, where what by asking questions, she's got him thinking. He goes, "Hey, that's a really good question. Hey, wait a second. I had to work for what I have." And we start to see that change of mindset, but there's more.
And that's like the...
Why do you have that mentality immediately where you kind of apologize to me? Like, let's talk about privilege. Let's talk about I'm a white man in America, so we could have grown up differently.
Got you.
Why is that your first initial reaction to me as a brown woman?
Wow, you're getting me good. See, these are the kind of conversations that I love having.
So let's start with her question. Why? Why is it that that was your first thought? Why is it that's where you went? And he says, "You're getting me good." She's right. If this were a wrestling match, he'd be on the ground almost pinned. But notice it in this verbal jujitsu. Again, she's not attacking him. She's kind of exposing the lie he was assuming. And in doing so, I think she started to change his mind. And I get that from some more of the conversation.
And I think it comes from a place of like, I wouldn't say caution, but like in this day and age, people are so quick to judge and react and cancel. And so I guess it's that like caution to go into an interview like this. I'm like, I don't know where we're at, but now I know where we're at and I can like go for real.
So it isn't so much that maybe he believes in white privilege. I don't want to speak for him, but in the culture we are with this cancel culture, this toxic stew of being told that because you're a white man, you're evil, that you have privileges and that you obviously have had more privileges than this brown woman that you're interviewing. So I want to use this. Again, I've used this kind of as an example because I think you see the assumptions being made because this is a young white man. I would guess he is probably around college age, although I don't know for sure. And he has been indoctrinated with the idea that he has been privileged probably all his life because he is a white male. And he meets a brown woman that wants to interview him, and he simply assumes that, you know, well, she's been a victim, she's been oppressed. I mean, she's brown, she's a woman, it must be harder for her. He makes those assumptions because those are the assumptions that were educated into him by our education system, by so much of society nowadays. And I think when we encounter people like that, and we all will at some point, our first reaction is to fire back. I see this all the time. I see this on social media comments all the time, where you know someone says something you disagree with, and the reaction almost instantly becomes angry. It often involves name calling or simply trying to pigeonhole somebody, and I like what this person did in that she asked a question and she tried to find out why he held these things. And in doing so, I think she exposed not just to all of us who watched the video, not just to the young man standing next to this white man. I don't know if the two of them were together, but she exposed to him. Wait a second. Am I doing this because society is placing this pressure on me? Am I doing this? Did I make that assumption because society is telling me this is who I am and ignores the fact, wait a second, I worked to get where I am. It's almost an epiphany. Wait a second, I worked to get here. I didn't have this privilege I keep getting being charged with. Now, this video has been going viral. As of this point, it's only got 11,000 views in the last 12 days, which is not surprising because I'm sure it's not being amplified by the masters at YouTube. But I want you to consider this. Check it out, right? The title is Liberal Admits That White Privilege Doesn't Exist, Savannah Hernandez. Watch it for yourself. But as you do so, I hope you'll learn a little bit about how to deal with contradictory information. She didn't try to shut him up. She didn't try to simply dismiss his position. He asked why. Or she asked why, I should say. And, you know, it reminds me, when I was teaching high school Sunday school, every year I got a new batch of students, and every year I would tell them the most difficult question I will ever ask you is, why? Because it opens you up to the idea of why you think the way you do. Is it your impression or is it something that is being imposed on you? It's why I say the proper, in my mind, response to a lie is not to suppress it, not to silence it, You don't fix misinformation by suppressing it. You fix it by exposing what is wrong about it. And I think Ms. Hernandez did a very good job of that. And I think that's something that the American people really need to learn. I think we need to learn to not simply degrade those who disagree with us, not try to silence them, not try to suppress them, but ask them why. And again, ask them why for two reasons. Reason number one, maybe they have an answer you haven't thought of. Maybe, you know, this gentleman would have come up with a reason why he had privilege that, you know, that she didn't have. It's possible. You never know unless you ask. But the other reason is it prevents it becoming a confrontation. It becomes an interesting and open exchange, and opening this person's mind up to the possibility that his presumptions weren't correct, that there were other things guiding him, that it wasn't that he had white privilege because he was white, but that he had been told that, and that in this society, merely contradicting this norm would be enough to get you shamed, challenged, even canceled. So again, I want you to think about this. I want you to learn about this for when you encounter, because there will be people you disagree with. I guarantee it. There'll be even be people that will get in your face about disagreeing. Again, that didn't happen here. Happens to be often enough online. Again, people like to call me names. Not most people. I mean, most comments I get are either, you know, they like it, they disagree with something, they ask questions. Very few, but not, you know, some show up and they devolve to name calling. And I think learning this technique is important. It's important because if you can keep your calm while people are losing their minds, well, then you can help guide the conversation. And even though she apparently made an impact on this young man she was talking to, I think she also made an impact on the young man that was watching. And I think that's the other thing we need to consider when we're challenging others or when we're challenged by others. Sometimes we're not going to convince the person we're talking to. We're not going to expose them to another idea. We're not going to change their mind. We're not even get them to consider that there's a possibility they may not be 100% correct. But by having a good conversation, by asking questions and being reasonable, you can make an impact on the people that are watching the conversation. That's why I say, we don't want to shut down people who disagree with us. We want to expose the error in their argument, and we want to do so in a way that doesn't deride them, doesn't belittle them. That to me is counterproductive. But to simply have this young lady, this young woman, talking to a young man and ask, why? Why do you believe you have a privilege? Why did you go there? What was that basis? I think opened up his eyes to, wait a second, maybe it is just society's telling me this is the case. Does it mean he's going to change his attitude? Who knows? Does it mean he's going to change how he reacts the next time he encounters a young woman of color? Who knows? But she opened up an idea. And I think that is how you deal with lies. White male privilege is a lie. It's a lie meant to divide us. It's a lie meant to put us against each other. It's a lie meant to foment the very argument this young lady diffused in the way she approached it. And I think that's something we can all learn from. I've got some other examples I need to get to, but first I have to take a break. Before I go, though, I'm hoping you'll check out the website, constitutionstudy.com. So I've got articles and videos. Most importantly, you can ask a question. If you have a question, if you have something you'd like me to describe or to answer, or a topic you'd like me to look at, Just go to constitutionstudy.com, click the Ask a Question button in the menu, and fill out the form. Just check the box that says you want me to answer on the radio, and I'll do my best to give you an answer to the question. Also, I hope you'll head to healthycell.com. They are a leading innovator in supplements designed to work at the cellular level. They've got a lot of great products. One that I use regularly is called Focus and Recall. See, it helps boost my short-term focus and my long-term brain power without the caffeine and sugar you find from coffee and energy drinks. So that you don't get that spike, you don't get the palpitations, you don't get the jitters, you don't get the crashes. All it is vitamins, and it works really, really well. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order at HealthyCell just by using the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So please, go to HealthyCell.com, put your order together, try the Focus and Recall or any of HealthyCell's great products, but use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud, and as a thank you, you'll get 25% off your first order.
Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Whether you're an independent, a Democrat, or a Republican, one thing remains true. Airborne viruses love us equally. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the advanced nasal solution Cofix RX. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. Spray goodbye to colds and flus with a Cofix RX nasal solution cleanse. That's COFIXRX.com. Save 20% by using promo code Out Loud at CofixRx.com.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You have rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read, we study the Constitution, we teach the rising generation to be free, and I'm glad you joined me today, because we're talking about exposing truth, or exposing the lie, and coming to find the truth. I spent the first segment talking about this viral video where we see a young man who believes in white male privilege when he's interviewed by a brown female until she asks questions and exposes to him the lie of his presupposition. And I thought that was very important, not simply for the exposure of the lie, but for the technique the lady used, Ms. Hernandez, I thought it was really good. And I recommend you go find the video. It's a very good video. Now I'm going to take another look at something else. You may remember when the Biden nominee for director of the Federal Aviation Administration was being interviewed. He was asked some questions about the air traffic control system and the different airspaces and the different rules about airspaces that I thought was, to me, it seemed a little bit of a gotcha moment. It seemed to me that these are not, we're talking about an administrator. We're not about talking about somebody that's enforcing the regulations about airspace. So maybe not knowing all the details. I was a little disappointed that the nominee didn't understand that the medical requirements for a pilot, and if a commercial pilot doesn't have the correct current medical, there are limits to how many passengers you can carry and those types of things. So, you know, that was a little disappointing, but I was also a little disappointed by, like I said, what appeared to be a gotcha questions. Well, now we have a new nominee. This nominee, however, is not to be a bureaucrat, at least not supposedly. This is a judicial nominee. See, Judge Cato Cruz has been nominated to the District Court of Colorado. And of course, he has to be vetted by the Senate, because the Senate, it gives advice and consent. And, well, let me start off with playing you a little bit of the questioning.
Tell me how you analyze a Brady motion.
How I analyze a Brady motion?
Yes.
Senator, in my 4.5 years on the bench, I don't believe I've had the occasion to address a Brady motion in my career.
Do you know what a Brady motion is?
Senator, in my time on the bench, I've not had occasion to address that. And so it's not coming to mind at the moment what a Brady motion is.
Okay, now I'm going to give you something that this nominee didn't have at the time. And that is, we're going to take time, we're going to look. What is a Brady motion? The case Brady v. Maryland is where the Supreme Court said that prosecution, with it withheld exculpatory evidence, violated the due process rights of the defense. Meaning, if you're in a criminal case the prosecution, and I may be wrong, that's how I understand it, the prosecution finds evidence that shows your innocence, they are required to turn it over to the defense. To violate that is a violation of due process. Now, I think I'm going to I know what happened here with Mr. Cruz, but I want to let you listen to the other clip first. But I want you to recognize this question probably came out of nowhere. And should this man be on the bench and a Brady motion were to come before him, the motion, including any briefs along with it, would explain where the motion came from and what the motion was, so he could go look it up in his voluminous law library. But to me, this opens up another concern about precedent. But let me give you, play the rest of the recording for you first.
Do you recall the U.S. Supreme Court case Brady v. Maryland?
I do recall the name of the case, Senator, yes.
And what did it hold?
I believe that the Brady case, Senator, I believe the Brady case involves something regarding the Second Amendment. It is not, I've not had occasion to address that. If that issue were to come before me, I would certainly analyze that Supreme Court precedent and apply it as I would need to the facts in front of me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so based on that, it appears that Judge Crewe has mistaken a Brady motion for the Brady Act, the Brady Bill, which was a Second Amendment bill. It was an anti-Second Amendment bill, actually. But you know, he misunderstood when he said Brady. His mind went to a Brady bill, therefore. That's where he got confused. I've never had a case involving the Brady Act. Oh, you mean it's a Brady opinion. I've never involved in those. Therefore, that's where I think his confusion came from. And I will give him a little bit of leeway for that, right? He has been piled on for making this mistake, but I want to give him just a little bit of slack on it. Now, you would think that a judge going to a district court would be familiar with the due process requirements of the prosecution. That would include the requirement to hand over exculpatory evidence, what is called a Brady motion. But to me, this exposes one of the more serious problems in our judicial system, right? Problem number one, we are talking about following opinions of prior courts. You see, a Brady motion is not law. I know they call it case law. It is not law. Do you know how I know that? Because I've read the Constitution, which says that all lawmaking power is vested in Congress, Article 1, Section 1, Clause 1. It also tells me that the supreme law of the land starts with the Constitution, the laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution, and the treaties made under the authority of the United States, which comes from the Constitution. Nowhere in there does it say anything about a judge's opinion being the supreme law of the land. In fact, the Supremacy Clause closes with, the judges in every state are bound to these laws. But you see, we're binding them to opinions. And not only are there probably at this point millions of opinions, the number of opinions grows daily. Because we're always focusing on, well, what does a judge say? So problem number one is he got lost in the definitions. It's inherent to what we call our legal system, which is, again, not based on law. It's based on what's called as common law or the opinions of judges and placing it beforehand. And that is proven because once he says, oh, okay, a Brady motion, my memory says Brady was something to do with the Second Amendment. I haven't heard one of those cases, but sure, if a case comes up before me that involves a Brady motion, in his mind, he's thinking of the Brady Handgun Violence Protection Act, I'm assuming, then I will research the opinion and I will follow the precedent, which is the other problem. See, what he should be doing is saying, well, okay, if a Brady motion comes before me, I will look at the Constitution and the laws made pursuant to the Constitution, and I will use that to determine the validity of any motion that comes before me. But we don't do that. So I give this particular judge a little bit of slack. I would think he would be familiar with such a due process, but the fact that it's got a name because it's not based in the law, it's based on the opinion of previous judges, shows, I give him some slack on that. But it also exposes the lie that we have a judicial system based on justice. It is not a system based on laws. It's a system based on men. If this was a system based on laws, then when a quote-unquote Brady motion were to come before them, it wouldn't be a Brady motion. It would be a due process motion. If you deny the defense exculpatory evidence, you deny them due process. Now, this came out of a case involving Brady and I don't know in the state of Maryland. That's where a court said, you know what, we think this is right, that if you don't hand over exculpatory evidence, it kills your case, right? You've denied due process. But the fact that it's based on the opinion of a court rather than on the law, to me, is problematic. So again, as I'm looking for the truth, as I'm exposing the lie, the truth is this does not prove to me that this person is disqualified, but it does kind of lean to the fact that maybe he's not the best qualified. And that wouldn't really surprise me because the Biden administration has shown a tendency to hire based on diversity numbers, quotas, rather than skill. Now, again, this may be a very good judge. He may just have, his mind played a little tricks on him. I don't know. It certainly doesn't look good. But to me, it certainly isn't the smoking gun that many in the media have pointed to that this person really isn't qualified for the office. I won't go that far. That's my opinion. To me, the lie it exposes is that our judicial system is not based on laws. It's based on the opinion of justices in black robes. And that, ladies and gentlemen, you should think that's a very dangerous thing because it is. So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's take a look at was a director of Office of Management and Budget. Her name is, DeShalanda Young. And she testified before the House, I believe, on the president's budget. Now, of course, it was the usual grandstanding and other things that politicians do, right? Both sides got up and had their opening remarks, and you can expect that the Democrats were for the budget, the Republicans against the budget. But I want to look at this director's viewpoint. Now, understand, this is the director of the Office of Management and Budget under the president. Now, she started her opening remarks with, Under the president's leadership, we've added more than 12 million jobs, more jobs in 2 years than any president has created in a single four-year term. The unemployment rate has fallen to 3.6%, one of the lowest in over 50 years. Okay, stop for a second. So did the president, under his leadership, were 12 million jobs created? Oh, no, she said more than 12 million, they've added more than 12 million jobs. How do you know how many jobs? There's no report that I know of that tells the number of jobs, but are those jobs filled? And how many of those jobs were recreated? In other words, if they're talking about the number of people who went to work, remember how many millions of people they put out of work and then put back into work. So just imagine this as a piggy bank, right? There's a difference between adding $12 million to your piggy bank and taking out $10 million and then putting $12 million back. So we're back to, you know, lies, darn lies, and statistics. I want to know how they know how many jobs were created versus how many jobs were filled. Now, she says that the unemployment rate has fallen to 3.6%. But the problem with that number is itself a bit of a lie, because the number excludes the people who have given up. People who are of working age and physically able to work, but have just given up trying to work because the job market is so bad, are not counted in that 3.6% number. So we've got a little bit of those numbers fudging to go around. But let's go on. She goes, we've taken action to lower prescription drug costs, health insurance premium, and energy bills while driving the uninsured rate to historic lows, and the president's economic plan is rebuilding America's infrastructure, promoting workers, and fueling a manufacturing boom that is strengthening parts of the country that have long been left behind. Okay, now we go from facts and data into wish lists. They've taken actions to lower prescription drug costs. Have those actions worked? Have they actually lowered prescription? No. We did something. We should get credit for just doing something. Has your health insurance premium gone down? Have your energy bills gone down? Now, I don't know about you. My health insurance keeps going up. Prescription drug costs are still high. And my energy bills keep going up. So they said they've done something. But if what you're doing isn't working, why should we keep doing it? Isn't that the definition that Einstein came up for insanity? Doing something over and over again, expecting a different result? And then she gets into the president's plan is to rebuild the infrastructure to promote workers and fueling a manufacturing boom. Well, what he has done has actually hurt America's infrastructure, has actually done things to put workers out of work. By shutting down pipelines, by denying drilling permits, by denying drilling leases, by doing all of these things that's just the energy sector. He shut down the economy, or did his best to. He mandated people become medical guinea pigs as a condition of work. And granted, that got stopped by the courts, but what he is doing certainly isn't promoting workers. And the fact that the data doesn't support that is kind of inferred by the fact that she doesn't quote numbers for that. The unemployment rate is down. Yeah, but how many people gave up? We created jobs. How many did you destroy first? I mean, Young said that the federal deficit fell by more than $1.7 trillion, ignoring the fact that it had gone up by $4 trillion. The fact of the matter is, in the first 2 years of the Biden administration, the administration spent $10 trillion and the national debt increased by $6 trillion. So what I find interesting here is so far, the director of the Office of Management and Budget has talked nothing about managing the budget. She claimed the Inflation Reduction Act would reduce the deficit by hundreds of billions of dollars, but never explains how. Because it involves spending money, not, by the way, on lowering inflation. No, on green energy is where most of it went. The vast majority of it went. So then we look at this budget for fiscal 2024 that she say is built around their key values, which appears to be running America into bankruptcy, to devaluing, to debasing the U.S. currency, to I would infer to minimize the number of private sector jobs, make as many as possible public sector or regulated by the federal government. They're regulating everything. They want to regulate gas stoves. Right. These are the values that appear to be part of this budget. But I want you to notice something very, very important. The director of the Office of Management and Budget does not appear to talk about managing the budget, much less balancing the budget, much less anything resembling fiscal responsibility. You know, I was just invited to join the board of a nonprofit out here where I live. And if I treated their budget the way Ms. Young and the president are treating the U.S. budget, I'd be in jail. Now, I have some other examples I want to look at, some other places to find the truth underneath the noise, but I have to take a break first. But I want to remind you, you know, maybe you disagree with me. I'm not the only voice. I'm not even the only side at America Out Loud. So join me. Go to AmericaOutLoud.com every day to find the latest news and goings on. See, it's more important than ever that we share this information, that we let other people know, because the mainstream media is hiding a lot of this. So do me a favor. Go to the website, AmericaOutLoud.com, and share the stories, the podcasts, the articles, the videos. See, by doing so, you're not simply spreading news. You're actually helping to secure the blessings of liberty.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. AmericaOutLoud.com. 7 amazing years. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Yes, we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation to be free. And today, we're digging for the truth. We're mining for it like gold. We're trying to expose the lies by finding the truth and exposing it. We talked about white privilege in the first segment and the wonderful video that's been making its rounds, showing a man learning, being exposed to the truth of the assumptions that had been drilled into his head. We've talked about nominees, a judicial nominee. We've talked about reports from the Office of Management and Budget and the truth behind some of that. But I want to focus again. We're going to go back to the House, but now we're looking at something a little different. So you're all familiar with the Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. It's a part of the House Judiciary Committee, and they've been doing some investigating. Now, I will tell you right off the bat, I'm a little nervous about this. I could easily see this Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government being the Republican version of the January 6th Committee, simply because it becomes political. Is it political theater? Because let's face it, the only legitimate reason for Congress to be holding these committee hearings is to the purpose of legislating. Congress is not responsible for enforcing the law. Congress's quote-unquote oversight is limited to the spending of money. So I want to see what comes out of this to see whether or not it's our just another version of a political kangaroo court. But they've released a report, and at least what this report says was rather interesting. From the report, I find, from the initial set of materials produced in response to the subpoena issued by the committee, it is apparent that the Biden administration misused federal law enforcement and counterterrorism resources for political purposes. The Justice Department's own documents demonstrate that there was no compelling nationwide law enforcement justification for the Attorney General's directive or the Department components execution thereof. Now, again, this is coming from a committee that is a majority Republican, and they're going after a Democratic administration. So I'm assuming there's bias already in there. But the question is, do they have evidence? Can they prove their point? In the report, they say, it appears from these documents and from the information received previously that the administration's actions were a political offensive meant to quell swelling discord over controversial educational curricula and unpopular school board decisions. So that is the conclusion, or one of the conclusions, of this committee. They looked at the documents and they said, you know what, this was a political move. It was meant to quell unrest over these unpopular decisions. Now, the committee noted that there were 25 investigations over what the National School Board Association suggested might be domestic terrorists. Now, listen to this. This, again, comes from the report. According to the FBI, none of the school board-related investigations have resulted in federal arrest or charges, highlighting the political motives behind the Attorney General's actions. The administration's goal seems to have been silencing the critics of its radical education policies. So again, I can't say they have definitive proof. They are making inferences, but I think those inferences are on fairly sound ground. If they have had 25 investigations and none of them have led to any arrest or to any charges, what was it all about? Now, the report concluded, quote, internal executive branch documents indicate that the Biden administration's use of federal law enforcement and counterterrorism resources is an example of government weaponization against American parents. If the Justice Department performed any due diligence prior to the issuance of the Attorney General's memorandum, it would have understood clearly and forcefully that federal intervention was unwarranted. Because that due diligence did not occur, the administration acted out of political motivations rather than for law enforcement reasons. Parents around the country had FBI assessments opened into them. I think the conclusion is fairly well founded, but again, not absolute. It's, you know, just because they didn't do the due diligence doesn't mean that their actions were politically motivated. It could have been simple incompetence. But with everything else that's going on, I think that's a reasonable inference. But here's also where my concerns come from. Because, now granted, I haven't read through the entire report. I am working on reports that others have done who have spent time with it. All right, so this is a little bit secondhand. I want to be obvious and open about that. But this is the part that concerns me. Says, the committee and the select subcommittee's work is not complete. This oversight will continue as the Justice Department and the Education Department continue to produce responsive documents. In addition, the FBI has produced only 14 pages of documents to date in response to the committee's subpoena. a flagrant disregard of the serious concern about the Bureau's misuse of its authorities against parents. There remain open questions about the development and issuance of Attorney General Garland's memorandum, issued only 5 days after receipt of the NSBA's letter to President Biden, and the coordination between the Justice Department and White House on that point. There remains open questions about how the FBI quickly operationalized the Attorney General's directive and whether the Bureau objected to civil liberty concerns inherent in the Attorney General's memorandum. The committee has outstanding subpoenas for testimony from Chip Slavin and Viola Garcia, the senior NSBA officials who signed the letter to President Biden. Until all responsive documents are produced and interviews and with the necessary parties take place, the committee and select subcommittee will continue its oversight to uncover the facts that will inform potential legislative reforms. Potential legislative reforms. The committee says it has evidence that a federal official misused their law enforcement capability, yet where is the call for the article of impeachment? If they are correct, if what they say is true, if they say that they have evidence that Merrick Garland did not do due diligence, did not justly use the Justice Department to go after opponents for political purposes, that they did not meet the due process requirements, the due diligence that would be required for due process, that this was an attempt to quell support for people who disagreed with the actions of the administration, why is he not being impeached? Better yet, if this was a malicious prosecution, or I should say a malicious investigation, where is the referral to the Department of Justice for criminal charges against the Attorney General, against the FBI directors that went forward with this? Again, where? See, all right now what we have is we have political statements made by the committee. Now, the truth is, I do believe there is sufficient evidence that President Biden, Merrick Garland, and many of the top levels at the FBI and other parts of the DOJ weaponized the FBI to go after people who disagreed with policies from this administration. I believe the evidence is there. Where's the execution? Where is the punishment for that? See, if all we're going to get from this committee is more rhetoric, is more, well, here's some information. It looks bad for them, but we can't do anything yet because we're waiting for more. Isn't that kind of the way January 6th ran? Where's the call for cutting funding for part of the FBI or the Department of Justice? Or how about just the Attorney General? How would you give him a pay cut? It's not there. Because the reforms that the committee keeps calling for, they aren't there. Now, I'm not saying they won't come in the future, but this is the concern I keep bringing up. When we have politicians doing investigations, you get political investigations. I don't care which side of the aisle it's on. And if our futures are going to be determined not by criminal or other investigations, but by political investigations, well, then it's always going to be a question of which political party is going to lie to you and attack the other side. It is exactly what George Washington warned us about in his farewell address. When he said, the alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge natural to party dissension, is its own frightful despotism. We are seeing that example right here today. And again, it's not just the Democrats. The Republicans are doing it as well. And again, it's not just the federal government. Look at my old home state of New York. The Empire. The Empire. See, when they got their hands slapped with their May-issue permit policy, they've come up with a new set of laws supposedly making concealed carry better. All it seems to have done is make it worse. One of the things in the law makes it illegal to carry a firearm into a house of worship. Now, this is being challenged in court, and we're still waiting to see what's going to happen from it. But I want to get down to the bottom of a verse of an important part of this. Because one, I've been a member of a church, different churches, for over 3 decades. Right? I'm in church almost every Sunday, unless I am really, really sick or just completely out of town. I'm in the same church. And one of the responsibilities I have in this church is I oversee security because, well, I got picked. It's a small church. There's not that many of us. And I was interested in it because I'm also a gun owner. To me, it's an important part of my life. Now, on the one hand, I look at people saying, well, you know, we've had some terrible shootings in churches. Yes, we have. Therefore, we're going to ban guns in churches so that will never happen again, which to me is incredibly blazingly stupid. Because the people that shoot up churches are not going to walk up to, oh, you know, New York passed that law. I can't bring this gun in to go shoot up a church. Doesn't happen. On the other hand, I look at it from the other point of view. My point of view is if there are people who are attacking houses of worship, shouldn't the people in those houses of worship have a way of defending themselves and doing so to the best of their ability? Why do you deny people in that church, in that house of worship, the tools to defend themselves? I'm not saying that everybody in the church should be required to carry a gun. No. But guess what? I'm not even saying that only the security team should be allowed to have guns. We've seen there is video evidence of a gunman in a church being taken down by an armed security team. That's not the only time, but there's video evidence of it on the internet. But why just the people who are part of security? Why not everybody else? Why do you think that suddenly when you walk inside of a church, you no longer have a right to defend yourself? Again, I understand the logic. It's just, it's twisted. It ignores reality. It ignores the world around you. It ignores human nature. Not one person with criminal intent in their heart is going to walk up to a sign that says no guns allowed and worry one whit about it. If you're out to kill people, getting caught on a gun charge is not the top of your priority list. It is not a deterrent. What it does is it makes the people inside that building defenseless. It makes them sheep ready for the slaughter rather than sheepdogs ready to defend themselves. So what can we learn from these news articles? What can we learn, more importantly, from the exercise of looking to find the truth, looking to expose the lie when it's laid out before us so nicely in these news articles, these news reports, that it's important not to simply take events or news or articles or analysis at face value. Yes, you want to make sure that the facts that are being reported are actually facts, you know, like OMB Director Young's, you know, 3.6% unemployment. Yeah, that's not the whole fact. We created 12 million jobs. Not the whole fact. But there's more of it. What's underneath there? What can we expose just by looking at this from a what I would consider a rational and reasonable point of view? Yes, we may disagree on things. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the lie that is often hidden with a veneer of truth. The headline that's designed to evoke an emotional response that when you read the article, you find out, well, okay, maybe it's not exactly what they implied. And when you stop and think about it, well, there's still a lot more under that as well. I guess what I'm trying to say is I've taken it into my heart, into my life, to not simply take things at face value. Before I make a decision, I'm going to look at it and examine it and try to expose the truth that is in it or the lie that it's covering up. Sure, there are things that I'm going to hear, I agree with, and I'm going to tend to not want to dig as deep under it, but those are the ones I need to dig in the deepest. Because if I want to find the truth, I have to go looking for it. It's not going to be laid out before you on a silver platter. You know, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Well, yes, I believe the truth of Jesus, but I also believe there's the truth of the facts that are around me. And that if I truly want to be free, then I must find the truth, and I must find it for myself. Because if my truth comes from someone else, I'm not free. I'm subject to them and their interpretations. Now, we may not always agree what the truth is. We may not always agree what the evidence says. But at least if we're looking from a point of truth that we, you and I, have gotten ourselves, we can have an honest and hopefully constructive conversation, asking questions for us to prove our point. Now, I hope you'll like that. I hope you'll come back every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to hear the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. If you can't listen then, all of my shows go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on talk radio. You can find them on your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor, subscribe to the show. Leave me a rating and review. Helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. You can find all the links at the homepage of AmericaOutLoud.com. But please share them. Share the links, share the stories, share the episodes as we share the blessings of liberty.